Hello and welcome to the Pro Football Weekly Fantasy Football Podcast. This is our standard 12-team league discussion podcast here. It's our first one of the year. We have our separate podcast for DFS. So if you're into DFS, we do have that podcast available to you. But this is for your standard league, your home league, your friends and family league. My name is John Solly. I am the managing editor for digital content at Pro Football Weekly and a fantasy football contributor. I am joined by my two co-hosts. First of all, Pro Football Weekly editor and contributor and fantasy guy and all-around good guy, Arthur Arkish. You can follow him on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. Arthur, how's it going, man?
Good guy most of the time. I'm feeling in good spirits today, so we should be good. I'm doing great. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're doing all right. We're also joined by Northwest Herald sports editor and PFW contributor Kyle Neighbors. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Neighbors. Kyle, you ready for some football, man?
Absolutely. I've drafted one league so far, and I drafted Julian Edelman. And so, you know, it's a good start to the year.
It's a fantastic start. That's why we're here. We're going to discuss that today. But first, I want to go over, Arthur, you are in what is called, what we've called a super league with a whole bunch of fantasy football experts, including yourself, Andy Behrens at Yahoo, Michael Beller at Sports Illustrated, Pat Fitzmaurice, who's been a contributor to this show before, Eric Edholm at Pro Football Weekly, obviously, and a whole bunch of other people. Arthur, tell us about that Super League. How did the draft go? What are some of your goals? Where were you drafting? Just sort of take us through that.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's obviously with a bunch of ringers, as you just mentioned. We're not really trying to drop names here, but there are some of the industry leaders in this league. So I guess the first question is, how the heck did I end up in it? But and B, am I crazy trying to get into this with all these ringers? But no, it's a lot of fun. It's called a super flex league because you have two flex spots and the second one can be filled with a quarterback in addition to the usual suspects, running back, wide receiver, tight end. So that is definitely going to affect strategy. I'll tell you what, it's called a super flex league and it's super fun. I kind of get a little, I don't want to say bored, but some of the normal just 12 team standard league, no PPR, no special kind of scoring or anything like that, it can get maybe a little mundane sometimes. So I really enjoy this league. And as I said, it does affect strategy. It was crazy. We drafted earlier this week, and because of that extra quarterback flex spot, we saw five quarterbacks go off the board in the first two rounds, and there were nine quarterbacks gone in the first 36 picks. So as you can imagine, A, you don't want to wait too long, or you're literally going to be left out in the cold without a starter. And B, it just it's interesting to see how some of the other more ordinary position skill guys kind of can fall into your lap too, if you're able to build your strategy the right way. So a lot of fun, but that was the first obvious big observation was we had the guy picking 12th and 13th. It's a snake draft. So the final pick in the first round, first pick in the second round, he double dipped with Tom Brady and Drew Brees. So I challenge you guys to find another league where you'd see anyone use that type of a strategy.
I can't say I would ever think of a league where I would do that, but a super flex league, which are becoming more popular, I think, and like you said, can really be a lot of fun. You know, you see stuff like that. So how did the rest of the draft go for you?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm sorry. I drafted a ninth overall, so I know you asked me that initially. I didn't say. So with the ninth pick, I was able to grab AJ Green, which I felt great about. I have him, I think, sixth overall. I got to open up my spreadsheet here, but I felt like I got really good value there with Green. And then on the way back, so I guess it was what, round two and the fourth spot, I drafted DeMarco Murray, and I just feel okay about that. I got to be totally honest. I was a little distracted. I know there's really no room for excuses in these things, but I had a very chatty and busy two-year-old running around in the room right next to me. And I somehow managed to overlook the fact that I have Michael Thomas and Rob Gronkowski stacked above DeMarco Murray in my top 200. So a chance that one can really come back to haunt me, especially Michael Thomas, guys. It wouldn't stun me to see him finish, in the top five of wide receiver scoring, if not higher than that. So that was a little scary. But after that, I went for my first quarterback, took Cam Newton in round three. Kind of strayed from my rankings there once again because I had Matt Ryan a slot higher at the quarterback spot, but still ended up going with Cam instead just because I really feel like a bounce back is coming. And I guess although a lot of people like to look for high floors in those premium rounds, Well, I went against that, and I went for the higher ceiling and went for the MVP of 2 years ago instead of last year's MVP. What do you guys think? Am I crazy, or are you seeing a Cam rebound potentially on the horizon as well?
Well, yeah, I really like Cam Newton this year. We were actually just talking about that in our Daily Fantasy podcast. I love what the Carolina offense is doing. I think it's going to be very dynamic, and I think he's going to be a big, big part of that this year.
I feel a little bit differently, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. I like Cam's weapons. I don't love Cam, which doesn't make a ton of sense. But Christian McCaffrey is going to get there by volume. I think Kelvin Benjamin and Greg Olsen is always going to be a very solid pick. I think Kelvin Benjamin has a bounce back here. But I see Cam kind of in the middle of the pack, you know, QB8, QB7, something like that, because I don't think he's going to run as much as he's done in previous years. So I like his weapons more because I think Cam will be throwing more, but I don't see Cam as that like QB2, QB1 potentially type of guy.
We should mention, even if Cam returns to QB7 or QB8, that'll be a long way from where he was last year. So,
But
I hear you. There's no question that the Carolina coaching staff and everyone else there, Carolina brass, is trying to get it into Cam's head that he really needs to do a better job protecting his body. And we'll see how that sort of shakes out now with, you know, potentially Jonathan Stewart sliding into obviously an early down role, but also the goal line role as well, while Christian McCaffrey kind of becomes the do-it-all in between the 20s, I would imagine. But we'll have to wait and see how that shakes out. Just a couple more interesting observations from this draft, guys. Everyone's going to want to know where Ezekiel Elliott and Andrew Luck go, or at least I assume everyone's curious about that. In this league, Zeke was the 11th pick in the second round, so that's about 8 slots past his ADP that I've been seeing on sites like Fantasy Football Calculator and FantasyPros.com. Interesting stuff. Obviously, we did this draft in the middle of his appeal hearing with Harold Henderson, and we don't really know yet what's going to become of Zeke, but to get him near the end of the second round, I felt personally like it was pretty good value. I'll ask you guys in a second. And then just quickly here on Andrew Luck, he went 10th overall, the 10th pick in the fifth round. Actually, Edholm is the one who was able to wait and wait. Our colleague Eric Edholm waited and waited and then was able to scoop up Andrew Luck almost near the start of round 6. So to me, that is absolutely a gamble worth taking in that spot. I was just writing for a separate piece at ProFootballWeekly.com today that it wouldn't surprise me to see Andrew Luck kind of pull off a Le'Veon Bell / Tom Brady of last year and be a top 3 guy at his position once he finally comes back for, you know, hopefully the final 3 quarters of the season. What do you guys think?
I'm avoiding Luck right now. I agree that, you know, there's a certain point in the draft where you kind of have to take him, but I'm for the most part letting other people take him. And then with Elliott, you know, I'm still assuming it's going to be 6 games, and Dallas has a bye, I believe, in week 7 or week 6. So you can't use, so if the suspension is upheld fully and it's not reduced, you can't use Zeke Elliott until week 8. And I don't think I can wait that long, especially for a guy that, you know, is probably going in the second round right now. So I'm sort of letting other people take him and actually trying to scoop up Darren McFadden in like round 6, round 5, if I can.
Yeah, I don't really have any interest in Zeke if he's going to continue to go in the second round there. He's just going to miss too much time to make it worth it. I do like Edholm's pick of being able to get Andrew Luck there at the end of the end of the fifth round?
Yeah, and in a super flex league, I was like pretty much stunned by this.
Was that
all the other quarterback activity earlier for him to last that long, I thought was pretty shocking.
Was that his second quarterback?
It was, yeah. He actually took Matt Ryan 1 pick after me when I went with Cam near the end of round 3.
Yeah, you know, if Andrew Luck can prove that he's healthy, that's going to be a pretty potent combo right there.
Yeah, and you look at the Colts' early season slate, too, and they've got the NFC West. So right out of the gate with the Rams and the Cardinals, two, you know, pretty stout defenses, obviously. And then week 4 is the Seahawks. So obviously no one knows when Andrew Luck is going to return, including Chuck Pagano, if you take him at his word. But it does look like things will really soften up if you get into that second quarter of the season and he's healthy and ready to go.
You know,
that may make Andrew Luck a trade target then, in my view. If, especially if someone takes him early, and let's say he plays and struggles against good defenses, then maybe that's someone you can strike for a trade, you know, after week three, week four.
Yeah, I would agree. And on the flip side of that, just one name that has stuck out to me when you talk about potential trade targets kind of based on their early season schedule, Carson Palmer in the first 4 weeks, the first 2 weeks, he goes to Detroit and to Indianapolis. Those are, you know, arguably the two worst defenses in football last year, at least in the bottom five or six. Then an undermanned Dallas defense in week three at home and San Francisco at home in week four. So to me, that looks like a golden opportunity for Carson Palmer to come out of the gate absolutely firing, and then depending on whether you believe he can maintain it, obviously you hold on to him, or maybe it drums up his value a little bit at age 37 and you kind of got the best out of him and you're able to dish him at that point.
Jim Palmer for Luck, there you go.
Yeah,
if you're going to trade for Andrew Luck, make sure you do it before week five, because then you get a nice little string here of San Francisco, Tennessee, and Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's hopefully right. Hopefully whoever you're trading with doesn't look at the schedule.
Yeah,
there has been some news, some injury news that I want to go over. In Kansas City, Kareem Hunt is going to be the guy at running back, it looks like, with Spencer Ware's injury. With Julian Edelman's injury in New England, Chris Hogan maybe is the guy. Where do you draft either one of those guys? If you're drafting this weekend, where are you pegging Kareem Hunt and Chris Hogan? Kyle, I'll start with you.
If I'm going Kareem Hunt, I'm willing to go middle of the third round. Is that too high? What do you think, guys?
I think that sounds fine to me.
In that offense, yeah. We've seen multiple guys over the last couple of years that step into that starting role for the Chiefs and rack up 20 carries, 110 yards, and a touchdown. I don't think if you're going to be able to get that production out of the Charkhandrick West of the world, I think you're going to be pretty good with Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, I would echo that sentiment, Kyle, and I would add that where did he go? He was the final pick of round three in this expert league draft. But again, you have to take into consideration, as I just said, all the quarterbacks that were already off the board. So there's a little doubt in my mind that he would have been closer at the latest to the top of round three. That's actually where Dalvin Cook was the first rookie off the board, pick one of round three. So the one thing that's going to be interesting, guys, is we haven't seen Andy Reid have to lean on a rookie running back since Brian Westbrook went down and LeSean McCoy stepped up to the plate. And obviously fared pretty well. I don't know that Kareem Hunt is special like LeSean McCoy, but I do know that he, as John alluded to, is going to be the guy right out of the gate. And he is a guy I loved. He was initially my favorite mid-round rookie running back sleeper. Now he's obviously going to be an early round guy. And Jamal Williams fills that bill as the guy I'm looking for later in terms of rookie running backs. I guess I'll go first just to answer your other question, John, about Julian Edelman. I think Chris Hogan is absolutely a good direction to look to first. You know, Danny Amendola was the first name mentioned by Tom Brady when asked how they replaced Julian Edelman, but he's just not someone you can depend on from a durability standpoint.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's made timely plays, but he hasn't made consistent plays. So that to me is a little bit of a crapshoot. I've still got Chris Hogan really low, though. I mean, I've got him as my WR, like he's 64 here, and I did these after the Edelman injuries, but maybe I've got to move him up significantly. Where are you guys kind of eyeing him in terms of value?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we've seen enough of a sample size from Chris Hogan. He was used quite a bit in that offense last year, and he never really popped. Anytime I watched New England, you know, obviously with Edelman now being gone for the year, they're going to have someone step up. But have you seen anything that really makes you think that Chris Hogan can be a reliable source?
The only thing I've seen is now that he has more opportunity with Edelman out.
Yeah,
that's the only thing I've got. So Arthur, you've got him in the 60s. I probably got Hogan in the 50s as far as wide receivers go. Yeah.
Here's the shame of it, guys. The one that I saw pop in that New England offense that you didn't expect to last year was Malcolm Mitchell. And especially after Chris Hogan went down for a few games, whenever it was, late November, early December, unfortunately, Mitchell is banged up. And although it's, you know, only his second full offseason, approaching his second year in the league, I'm already a little worried that he's going to be one of those guys where you're always not sure from a durability standpoint. And I don't know that he's the natural replacement. Hogan's probably a more natural guy to potentially roam the slot. I still wouldn't rule out, I don't know what the Patriots have said on it, but I would say there's still an outside shot you're going to see either James White or Deion Lewis spend a ton of time working as that slot inside receiver If that does happen, and there's no, we don't have any evidence it's going to, it's just a hunch, it'd be interesting to see how fantasy leagues would potentially play with their, you know, their positional standing, if you will, if something like that were to happen.
You know, Malcolm Mitchell was actually the guy I went onto the waiver wire and picked up when I had to get rid of Julian Edelman here this past weekend.
He's a good player. I mean, to be able to earn the level of trust that he did, I mean, in the Super Bowl, just look, he had a bunch of third down chain moving catches, and just the way that Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady seemed to really believe in him as a fourth round rookie who, remember, had that gruesome elbow injury in his first preseason. He made a great amount of strides in a short amount of time. We'll just see if he's able to stay healthy enough to kind of realize his potential in this golden opportunity we've discussed.
Yeah, I think this is for particular for people like me who had drafted already when this Julian Edelman injury happened. If you're looking for someone, I think Malcolm Mitchell has to be up there just for the potential. Hopefully, unless your team is in bad shape, you should have someone that's going to be able to fill in the short term. So I'd rather go with the high upside guy, stash him on the bench. 3 or 4 weeks in, you'll have a better idea what you have.
Definitely good advice. Let's move on to one more injury-related segment here. Cam Meredith out for the year for the Bears. Do we even bother to bump up Kevin White?
Well, apparently most people are, because I actually took him in a late round in my league, and looking at his ownership, it's gone up 31% over the last 3 days on ESPN.
Yeah, I don't know, guys. If I can spend a late round flyer, one of my final two picks, probably like my last pick before I address defense and kicker, you know, maybe I spend it on Kevin White. But I just, you know, it's such a tall order for him. And I just, that whole Bears passing game, I'm probably steering clear of for fantasy purposes. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I'm not bumping up Kevin White until I see it on the field. I can't. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't think you have to take him very high in a draft. I'm not saying we're bubbling up multiple rounds, but I think he's certainly someone that you should consider in the late rounds.
I'll consider him. It's another guy that I'm sort of letting other people take, I feel like.
Only fair for us to mention, I'm sorry, Kyle, just very quickly, I just want to quickly mention that he did improve gradually in those four games as a rookie. He didn't really come on like gangbusters in week one. It took time. So maybe the fact that he has had a pretty disappointing preseason is just kind of the way that he slowly builds up, and he will be able to eventually turn things on.
Yeah. And you look at last year, the amount of targets he did get in those four games before the injury. I mean, if he's going to be getting 8 to 10 targets a game, which he should in this offense, you got to take a chance.
Yeah, I think that's definitely worth considering. I think that's a good point.
Well, you said it. It's all about opportunity. It's all about volume. So you're absolutely right. Even if he hasn't been the most efficient, and he hasn't thus far, obviously, God, I mean, the sample size is so small, it's even silly to say that. But we haven't seen the explosion, and we haven't seen the efficiency. But as Kyle said, it's all about volume and however many looks he's going to get. And unless you're a believer in the likes of, God, I don't even know who it's going to be.
Kendall Wright, Marcus Whedon, Victor Cruz. Right. I mean, someone's going to have to catch a ball in that offense. And in his third year, it's going to have to be the first round pick. And if not, then, yeah, that's a real problem for that Bears offense. But you got to figure it. Like I said, he's got to see double-digit targets at least early on until he shows that he can't be that guy.
I'm actually, if we're talking Bears wide receivers, if you really need to take a Bears wide receiver, I'm more of a fan of Kendall Wright because he knows Dal Loggins' system. And he was, I believe, a 1,000-yard receiver in Tennessee under that system. It seems to be a better fit.
And especially in PPR format, because you're right, he did have the 1,000-yard season, but I think he averaged like 9 yards a catch or something. So,
yeah,
going against what I just said. So, yes, you're right. He's going to get a ton of looks, and we haven't seen a ton of them yet, but I'm still of the belief that if you are, you know, bent on adding someone in the Bears passing game, don't overlook the tight ends. You know, Deion Sims got $10 million guaranteed. Adam Sheehan, the second-round pick, although he's been invisible in the preseason. And then they do have an interesting guy in Zach Miller, who's really kind of a wide receiver in sort of a tight end's body. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him.
Okay, we have spent enough time on the Bears offense on a fantasy football podcast. Let's move on. Who are some of your favorite rookies that you are targeting, either in drafts or even a guy that may be on the waiver wire already in your league if you've already drafted? Arthur, who are some of your favorite rookies you want to target?
Yeah, I've been obsessed with this whole rookie running back class. If you head to Pro Football Weekly and read our fantasy content, you know that. And the guy that I grabbed last night was Jamal Williams, the Packers number two back. I got him in the 13th round. I just think that the Packers, I don't think it. I know it. They've said it. Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, they haven't had a less effective run game than they did last season, and they're determined to turn that around. It doesn't mean that Ty Montgomery can't be successful too, but McCarthy, even when Eddie Lacy was at his best, James Starks was getting 100 touches or 100 carries a season. Go back to Ryan Grant as a rookie. Obviously, Eddie Lacy is a rookie. He will lean on these guys if he believes in them. So Jamal Williams is kind of where it's not where it starts and ends, but he's a guy I'm interested in terms of being able to get great value in the later rounds. And the other guy is Chris Carson, the Seahawks running back, a seventh rounder. And it's a very crowded depth chart, I know, but he's gotten some first team run in the preseason. Eddie Lacy has not looked good, and I've just reached a point where I don't know that I can really count on Thomas Rawls or CJ Procise at all.
All right, Kyle, what are some of the rookies that you're looking at?
You know, I think Joe Mixon is a guy that you really have to look at hard. There's a lot of carries already in the log for Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. Bernard in particular has had trouble staying healthy here. I think you're going to see Joe Mixon mixed in early and probably going to see him get more and more carries as the season goes on. Jeremy Hill has just been atrocious the last year, or maybe even the last 2 years now. I think he was, 3.6 yards per carry or somewhere in that range last year.
Not very efficient.
No. So I'm a big fan of Joe Mixon. They're a power run game. I think they're going to continue to be that way. And then Dalvin Cook, who obviously you're going to have to pay a little bit for. It's not like it's any hidden secret here. But Minnesota, once again, a team that loves to run the ball. We thought it would take a little more time for Dalvin Cook to kind of seize that job, but he's run away with it in the preseason.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good observation that Cook really is the guy. The guy I'm looking at, and I generally try and avoid rookie wide receivers. They don't, in general, have great years. I know there are definitely exceptions, but someone has to catch the ball in Buffalo, and I think it's Zay Jones. I think that's a guy that I'm willing to pay up for in drafts and go and get, because I think the volume is absolutely going to be there. He's got his college wide receivers coach with him now in Buffalo, so I think there's some familiarity, some comfortability. I think Zay Jones is a guy that I'm really kind of going out on my way to target. Do you guys like Zay Jones at all?
I love the player. I just hate the situation in Buffalo. I'm probably going to steer clear. I've moved LeSean McCoy down. He was my RB3. Well, maybe Melvin Gordon always was, but I moved McCoy down a little bit, and I just worry a lot about that going off the rails quickly in Buffalo. Let's get Kyle's opinion on Zay Jones, and I'll give you one more to consider as well, because I think Kyle probably knows him well. What about Kenny Galladay? Anquan Boldin, team high 8 touchdowns in Detroit last year, number 3 in the NFL in red zone targets. He's gone, obviously, and Kenny Galladay has been making waves. Kyle Nabers, what do you think about his opportunities to make an early impact?
Oh, yeah. You know I love Kenny Galladay. I actually was at his pro day at Northern and was really impressed with him. He's looked great this preseason. They're an offense that's going to put the ball in the air. And he's going to be a solid number 2 there, I think. You're going to see a lot of him in the red zone. Going back to Zay Jones, I'm with Arthur here. I like the player. I'm not touching anything with that offense right now. But overall, when it comes to rookie wide receivers, I kind of learned my lesson last year. I was a big fan of Will Fuller. And you saw him kind of have that quick start in week 1 against the Bears, and it just kind of went away. And that was a perfect situation. If they really needed someone in Houston to step up in a second receiver role. And obviously there was a lot of problems at the quarterback situation. But Will Fuller did nothing to separate himself, and it's just something you see over and over and over with rookie wide receivers.
Yeah, there are exceptions, but in general, rookie wide receivers are not good fantasy pickups. They're overvalued, I think. So, guys, this was a great great discussion for the first episode of the season. I'm really excited to be talking with you guys every week and giving some of our favorite plays. So we are going to sign off. So for Arthur Arkish and for Kyle Nabers, my name is John Solly. We will see you next week on the Pro Football Weekly Fantasy Football Podcast.